one of the Yisurim of Avela, which applies to Tishbav as well, which, you know, as the afternoon goes on, we'll speak about Bobi Arichos, is a prohibition against learning Torah. Nevertheless, based on what the Gemara tells us, that those areas of Torah which are not that enjoyable, which are a sad tone to them, the one is permitted to learn, we assume the halacha both in Tishbav as well as the Imei Avelos. So following that, the track of the Shulchan Aruch, that one is permitted to learn certain areas of Torah on Tisha B'Av, so we're going to try to involve ourselves primarily in the halachas of Avelos. Nevertheless, the post can tell us, and we'll also talk about this, but not everyone even agrees to this, we'll talk about this hopefully later on also, that we generally assume that even though one is permitted to learn certain areas, such as Hilchos Avelos on Tisha B'Av and during Shiva, nevertheless, one should try to avoid going too much in depth. As you can say, all the Shiva Torah, even Hilchos Avelos, that can give a person tremendous simcha. So we try to avoid doing that. We should try to learn the Dinim Kipshita, and we should try to basically focus on more of an overview in terms of the Hilchos Avelos. You know, so Shulchan writes that sometimes Nebuch, a person is learning, and sometimes something is mischadish in the middle. So what can you do? Anas Shachmana Patri, but at least the focus at least should be to try to learn things somewhat on a superficial level, really to try to get a little bit of an overview in terms of Hilchos Avelos. So we're going to start with something which is not really Hilchos Avelos per se, but it's really the introduction to Avelos, and those are the Dinim of Aninos. As we know that the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Brachos, that when a person is Misha Mesa Muta Lefanov, that when a person experiences the loss of a close relative, so they have a whole status of halacha called an onein. Now the truth is that term onein that we're going to use just for simplicity is really an incorrect halachic term. The Rav already pointed out that the term onein really in halacha refers to the prohibition against eating kachim if somebody's relative just died, and the prohibition against eating ma'isa sheni, halachas that appear in other places in the Chumash. When we speak about hilchos aninus, we're not talking about that. We're talking about not doing mitzvot in the state of being an onein. We're talking about not having basa, not having yayin in the state of being an onein. But the reason why we use the term onein is because it's shorter than the term misha meisa mutal lefanav. But the real halachic term is in fact hilchos misha meisa mutal lefanav. We're going to call it hilchos onein hilchos aninus. So what is the halacha of misha meisa mutal lefanav? So the Mishnah, the Gemara, and the third Pech of Brachos tells us that the basic thrust of misha meisa mutal lefanav means from the time that the immediate relative passes away until the kavura. So your primary focus is supposed to be on the yadav of the kavura. Therefore, anything that's going to interfere with the tzarchia kavura, anything that's not going to be in the spirit of taking care of the kavura, is not permitted to be done at that time. Again, the primary yisurim are the isur of doing mitzvos and the isur of basa v'yayin. What exactly does the term mean, misha meisa mutal lefanav? So the Gemara uses the phrase that kol shemutal lav kovro. The Gemara says that a person whose relative dies, who the relative, the karav who's alive, has a responsibility to bury the mace, so they're considered to be the misha meisa mutal lefanav, misha mutal lav kovro. So this term of misha mutal lav kovro led to a major machlekes mirishonim, which is still a burning issue, still a hot issue, aray mazeh, as to how precisely we define what constitutes an onen. So ma'isa shoya kachoya happened to Rabbeinu Tam. Quoted, the Tosus quoted in Brachos, and the Rush quoted in Brachos, and Ma'isa Shehaya, that the sister of Rabbeinu Tam passed away. And Rabbeinu Tam lived in another town, so Rabbeinu Tam's sister happened to have been married. It's not clear whether this is the sister who actually was the mother of the Ri. One of Rabbeinu Tam's sisters had an illustrious son who was the Ri. The Ri was the nephew of Rabbeinu Tam. So it's quite possible that it was the same one. So Rabbeinu Tam's sister passed away, and the news came to Rabbeinu Tam that his sister had died, and the Kavura had not yet taken place. And Rabbeinu Tam said that he did not have the halachic status of an onein. Why did Rabbeinu Tam claim that he did not have the halachic status of an onein? So Rabbeinu Tam said, it's not mutal alayla kovro, but it's not up to me. I'm not the one responsible for burying her. Why exactly did Rabbeinu Tam feel that he was not the one responsible for burying her? So here there are two different versions in the story of what happened to Rabbeinu Tam. So one version of the story is that Rabbeinu Tam said, she's married, so her husband is mitapel on a kavura. Her husband is required to bury his wife. So Rabbeinu Tam said that I'm a brother, so I'm not really involved. I'm not going to be making the preparations for the kavura. So since the halacha of onein stems from being the one who's required to do the kavura, so Rabbeinu Tam said I'm not the one. So I don't have the status of an onein in halacha. The other version of what Rabbeinu Tam said was the reason why I'm not required to be an onein. I'm not bound by the halacha of an onein right now is because it's in another town. So the relatives in the other town are going to take care of it. So according to the second version of Minhag HaTam, the emphasis wasn't so much on a married woman versus a single woman versus another relative. Rather, the emphasis was, are you in town? Are you really actively being involved in the Tzorach HaKfurah now? The Rosh disagrees with Rabbeinu Tam. The Rosh says that it's not true, that if you are halachically a relative, whether you are in town, you're not in town, you're married, you're single, it doesn't matter. If you're halachically an immediate relative, any relative who is required to sit shiva for, you're considered to be an omen. So this question now becomes very, very relevant. You have a situation where sometimes a person passes away in another town, in another country, and you have a relative, for argument's sake, you have a relative in New York, and the Mesa's in Eretz Yisrael, and they're not going to go to the Kavura, whatever the case is, all the people, they can't find whatever, they're not going to go to the Kavura. They're not going to have any shaykhas whatsoever to the Tzachia Kavura. So the question is, are they really owning them or not? So if you take them in Tom's very limited definition of owning, so owning means someone who's mamish dehman, I'm present, I'm required to be involved in the Kavura, so only such a person is an onen. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, many of these modern-day shaylos, the person is not technically an onen. Because if you go with the Rosh's understanding of onen, that onen means mutal abakov. I'm sorry, chayav l'stabel olam. Anyone who I'm mechiv to misabel for, if that's called mutal abakov, so then there would be a halacha of aninos even under these types of scenarios. So this is still an ongoing machlokes. Adayam azet machlokes. The Shulchan Aruch and the Shach and the later poskim. How to be machriya the shayla? There are different opinions amongst the rabbanim b'zman hazeh. How do you pass in these kinds of shaylas where the relatives are mamish no shaykhs whatsoever to what's going on because they're far away and the other relatives taking care of it? Is that still considered to be an onen or not? This idea that there is some kind of a link between the halachas of onen, the prohibitions of the mitzvahs, and the prohibition of lust of the yayin, that's linked somehow to the fact that I'm being metapel in the kvura in some sense. So that's what the Yerushalmi tells us. That what if the mace was already handed over l'katofim, l'katofim literally l'katef, you saw, the pallbearers, those are going to carry the mace on the shoulder. So the Yerushalmi says that if the mace was already handed over, that means the krovim already finished whatever they're doing, and now the mace has already been given over to the katofim, so then technically speaking, the aninus doesn't apply anymore. The aninus falls by the wayside, once it's v'saru l'katofim. That's what says in Yerushalmi, that's what the Shulchan Aruch Taskins. So there is a big question in the later Acharonim, how does this play out in terms of our Chaver Kedisha Bizman Hazeh? Should we equate the modern day Chaver Kedisha with the Katofim of the Yerushalmi? So if you hold that the two are equated, so come out a tremendous Chiddush Bizman Hazeh, usually what happens in normal protocol today, when a person passes away, usually the first call is to the Rav, but Chaver Kedisha gets involved fairly quickly. The Chaver Kedisha will come and they'll take the body away, and now they're going to get the Aron, and they're going to get the Techarichim, and they're going to do the Tara, all the things that in the olden days was really the domain of the individual relative. So if you hold that the handing over to the Chaver Kedisha in the year 2005 is the same as the Rishamit Katofim, so we have just about done away with the halachas of Aninus Guzman Hazem. It's basically the whole category of halacha called Onen basically doesn't apply because we have a Masaru, the Chaver Kedisha, immediately. So many, many poskim disagree with that analysis. Many poskim argue that the two aren't quite the same. That the Sarula Katofim of the Yerushalmi, which uproots the Aninus, and today's Chaver Kedisha is not really the same for a variety of reasons. And that Yehuda writes that he thinks that the Yerushalmi was only talking about in a situation where the relatives aren't even going to go to the cemetery. He means that mamish, they wash their hands in the store. They're finished. They did whatever they did, and it's over, and now they're not being noticed in the Kvura. So that's the only time that the Yerushalmi made it, said it's Chiddush, that Mesarula Katofim, so the whole Aninus falls by the wayside. Whereas Bizman Hazeh, usually the relatives do go to the cemetery, so Aninus will still apply Bizman Hazeh, notwithstanding the role of the Chaver Kedisha. Others argue that maybe Abban and the Chaver Kedisha, they don't do everything, they take care of most of the things, but still the relatives are still involved in preparing a seder, and they're very often involved in telling people about the Levaya, which is going to add the Chavon HaMeis. So even though they may not be involved like Chazal described, the actual Chavon HaMeis in the sense of digging a grave and making an Arun and sowing Techrichim, so aspect of Chavon HaMeis may be done by the professionals, but there are other types of Chavon HaMeis that are still done by the relatives. So maybe those types of Chavon HaMeis is also enough to invoke the halacha of Aninus. For a variety of reasons, it was generally assumed as Bizman Hazeh that the category of Aninus still does apply today, notwithstanding the fact that the mace was handed over to the Chaver Kedisha. But every once in a while you get a strange type of a scenario where it's really not shaykh to speak about aninus in the classic sense of the word, because as we said already, that aninus is linked to the notion of the chi of kvura. According to Rabbi Natan, it's linked very, very directly only to someone who's actually literally being involved in the chi of kvura right now. Or even according to the Rosh, it extends a little bit to people who maybe should be involved in the chi of kvura. But there is clearly some kind of a link between the halachas of aninus and the fact that the kvura is supposed to be done, you know, as soon as possible to enhance the kavod hanes. So what would that halacha be if you have somebody passes away and it's not shaykh to do a kvura? It's impossible to do a kvura right now. Why is it impossible to do the kvura? Because you don't have a body. The body's not here. Why don't you have a body? The body is lost. The body is under rubble. They're trying to find the body. They know the person died, but they can't find the body right now. There is no kvura to take place right now. Or let's say you have a situation, as we alluded to this morning in the kiddos, the ma'aser of Maharami Ruthenberg. If Maharami Ruthenberg was nifter in jail, and he wasn't released by the non-Jewish authorities for 14 years. So you're going to tell me that for 14 years his relatives were owning him? It's ridiculous. The Rishonim quote that story. The Rishonim say that that doesn't make any sense. And the whole idea of the halachas of aninus is to enhance, to encourage that their relatives should be involved only in the kavua. They shouldn't be eating meat and drinking wine. Or they shouldn't be davening shacharis. They shouldn't be sitting and learning. They should be osing in the serving kavua. What do you want from the poor relatives of the Maharal? How are they going to be osing in the kavua? There's no body there. They don't have a shush to bury the nays. So b'chi agavna, these types of unique situations where there's no ability whatsoever to take care of the nays, so nebuch, the halachas and aninus are put on hold. It doesn't necessarily mean that aveilus begins. That's way down the line today. We'll find out when exactly aveilus begins. But in terms of aninus, in terms of that unique period of halacha, the issa mitzvahs and the issa of bosa v'yayin, so that is really put on hold. It doesn't apply under these types of circumstances. And you have modern day shailas that come up about, do we have any modern applications of this principle? Hopefully we should never have such these horrifying examples. But the post can have a discussion about the following shaila. They're already in the Achronim, ready to put you quote to shaila. What if you have a situation where a person is nifter and the body is not being released by the non-Jewish authorities, not chalila out of spite and not out of rishus, it's not being released for a short amount of time because sometimes there's a criminal investigation that's taking place. Sometimes there are certain tests that have to be done on the body. We'll talk about them hopefully then as we go on. What's allowed to be done, not allowed to be done. Sometimes a person dies in a tragic way that's a push it. They have to wait for a little while before they're able to release the body to the relatives. But it's not Khalil that they're holding the body up for 2 years, for 14 years, they're holding it up for 2 days. And they're telling the relatives, as soon as we finish whatever we have to take care of, so we're going to give it to you, we're going to release the body. So would you say during that short amount of time that the relatives are not owning him? So that's a big machlokes. That was a shout in the post. So many posts can, I think, a note to say that they are still considered to be owning him. And the rationale being that in the case of the Maharam, so the relatives never knew they were ever going to get the body back. It could be that Taka 14 years later they got it back. It could be Taka never, they would never get the body back. So it could be there's never going to be a kvura. Whereas over here we know it's going to be a kvura. We know for a fact there's going to be a kvura. It's going to be 48 hours there's going to be a kvura. So once in a while, Taka, I was once unfortunately involved in such a shiloh with someone in my shul who was killed in a car accident. And apparently whatever the laws were, that they weren't able to release the body for a certain amount of time because they had insurance things, whatever it was, had to be a certain amount of time had to pass or to do whatever had to be done. So the shiloh was, other people still considered to be owning him, so this is Mamish the shiloh. So I think that most can assume that since it's really just a short amount of time, and we know for a fact that the body is going to be released, so that halach of the Maharam, that case of the bodies that are locked up in jail for years that are gone by, so those probably don't apply under these circumstances. There is a discussion that the Rishonim have about situation. Let's say a person is escorting the body in the kavura, but during the time that the person is escorting the body in the kavura, so they're not obviously involved in the kavura per se. So in the olden days, you would have this sometimes in a boat. Sometimes you would take the body by boat to Eretz Yisrael. So it can go days, you can go for days before the body is actually going to reach kavura. So what's the halacha? Are the relatives considered to be older than enough? So there are more quotes that there's a little bit of a compromise. I mean, it depends how long it is. If it's a very short amount of time, less than a day, So then we assume that the aninus is still valid. It means basically they're still in the kvura mode. Rosh Enkei, if it's for a long period of time, so they're on a boat with the body for 2 weeks, so then the mamish can't do anything, hands are tied. So that's not considered to be a onanim. So the modern day poskim try to extrapolate from that rabbah to our scenarios in terms of the plane. The common shaila, person escorts the mace from New York to Eretz Yisrael, takes 10 hours. So what's that look up? So if you follow strictly what it says in the rabbah, that's less than a day. So if I, there's probably no place in the whole world today where you can fly in more than a day. So it's less than a day. So that's still considered to be an onanim. That b'chap enough kamina that the relative is still considered to be an onanim. He can't do mitzvahs, other things. Can have also the yayin on the plane. There is a suggestion that Rav Shlomo Zalman has. I don't know if he meant it totally because Tzat quoted as a ha'ara, as a possibility. Rav Shlomo Zalman said that maybe planes are different than boats, because in a boat, so the relative is traveling together with the mace. So somehow there's like psychologically in a sense, but there's like a feeling that he's still being Isaac in the Tzarchei HaKvura. So that's still a little bit of an onus. Whereas the Zvana Zeh, when you fly with the mace on a plane, the mace is put in the cargo section. So there's absolutely nothing kihu zeh that you could possibly do during those 10 hours, which is shy to any kavanah mace whatsoever. So maybe you could argue that your hands are mamish tied, so you're temporarily not considered to be an owning. That's a shayla that Shlomo Zalman raised. Again, there are different opinions as to how to extrapolate from this particular case of the Ramah. But I call bottom, the whole theme and everything that we're basically saying is that the idea of aninus is definitely kavur oriented. So when you have situations where either you're not being involved in the kavur, like at least of course you're in the Tam, or in situations where it's not shayach to have a kavur, like the case of the Maharam, these kinds of scenarios where the kavur is for whatever reason not taking place, and you're not being involved in it, or unless you're like a tafim, so those may be situations where the halachas of aninus are really put on hold. What about other normal circumstances?
Is it against the rush that
I mean, the question is this really the same as the rush? It's a little bit different than the rush, because over here it's not shaykh. I mean, they can't do anything. Case where I've been in town, he could have gone to the other town, he didn't. That's the question, is it really the same? When we speak about not being able. Yeah, but please listen to enjoy what you're doing. Also, it's just some guys just bringing some. When we speak about the relationship between aninus and the actual kavura itself, so this clearly brings up the question: the following shaila, what's the status of a person who's an onin on Shabbos? So Shabbos is obviously a time when it's not shayach to be sitting for. No, you're allowed to do on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do a kavura on Shabbos. So what's that halacha? So should we say that the whole aninus falls by the wayside? So this is a whole complicated sugya. This is, I guess, a little bit more together with the lumdas, with the Pavli and the Rishalmi, a whole sugya at the beginning of the third track of Barakas that tells his marachon upon is there aninus on Shabbos or not? Again, the basic idea being that it doesn't really make sense that the dinim of aninus should apply on Shabbos, because in Shabbos, there's mamish nothing at all you can do. Your hands are more tired than the maram's hands. It means your mamish can't do a thing. So what's presented to the finalists, all the dust settles in terms of the lumdas, was basically presented to Shulchan Aruch as follows: that for the bulk of the day on Shabbos, there's really no aninus. But the owning them on Shabbos, so they're allowed to have basa, they're allowed to have yayin, there's the mitzvahs, but all the dinim of aninus are put on hold. And the only thing is, at the very, very end of Shabbos, there's a special halacha in Shabbos that right before the end of Shabbos, you're allowed to do what's called machshech al tchum. Machshech al tchum means that you're not allowed to go chutz al tchum until Shabbos is over, but you're allowed to make certain achanas. You're allowed to walk towards atot till the very end of the tchum with tzarech mitzvah. So one of the tzarech mitzvah, the Gemara says, in the end of Shabbos, you're allowed to do is the tzarech v'rus ameis. So let's say you have to get an aron and tachrichim, and the only way to get it is chutz al tchum. So you're allowed to walk right 5 minutes before shkir. You're allowed to walk and stand by the tchum and wait till Shabbos is over, in order to get the Arba Techrichim. So therefore the Shulchan Aruch quotes in the Rishonim, since there are certain achanas, very, very limited achanas that you could do on Shabbos, so at that time, when you start to do those achanas, then the dinim of aninus kick in. It's not as that whole concept doesn't really apply. It's not as that, who's mashchal atchum? The only achanas you're going to do is by making a telephone call, and you're not allowed to make a telephone call till Shabbos is really over. So the nice of it's not as that, basically the person is not really considered to be a no-name until Shabbos is actually over. There is a question in terms of aninus on yontif, so the same guidelines. I mean, if you're not going to do anything on yontif, so then there will be aninus on yontif. The only possible exception is going to be yontif sheni. The yontif sheni, that locha strictly is, you are allowed to have a kvura on yontif sheni, even on yaday yisrael, to the ferish of Gemara. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us that there were certain communities that the people weren't so learned, and they passed in this halacha, they had a kavura on yontif sheni, and the Amoraim got angry at them. They got upset at them, and they said, it's not appropriate for you to have a kavura on yontif sheni, since your people are such amaratim. So if they see people having a kavura, they can think you're allowed to do everything else on yontif sheni. So it's going to lead to the day zilzul on yontif sheni. So therefore, the Chachamim recommended that in a place where there are a lot of amaratim, so it's not right to follow the school of having a kavura on yontif sheni. So this issue resurfaced in the days of the Rishonim, that in a certain community in France had a kavura on yontif sheni, and Rabbi Natan got upset at them. He said that they're not such tamid chamid, we thought they were also amaratim, and didn't think that it was appropriate. So the shaila resurfaced again in America. So in the early years, in the 30s, 40s, so the shaila was raised once again, what should be the protocol in America? Should we permit what the Gemara says is nikar din is mutter, that you're allowed to have a kavura on yontif sheni? Or should we be afraid it's going to lead to a terrible zilzul on yontif? So this was the machlekes apostim, a very well-known machlekes apostim. It basically boils down to the machlekes being Rav Moshe on the one hand, against many of the chassidish apostim on the other hand. So Rav Moshe was of the opinion that in America it's too dangerous to have a kavura on yontif sheni, it's not a good idea, it's going to lead to a zilzul. So therefore that became the practice. And most of our communities, most of them do not have kavuras on yontif sheni, but nevertheless in the chassidish communities, so in fact they do, in fact maybe in the Breuer's community they still have Arayim Azeh, they still have Kruz and Yadav Sheni. There was unfortunately a tragic story a couple of years ago in the farmer community. There was a fire, Shavuos, who separated the Shavuos, and in fact they did the Kvura on Yadav Sheni. I mean, they think they, if I'm not mistaken, they drove the mace from Williamsburg to where the farmer based at Kvaros is in Monroe, up to the mountains. As it says in the Gemara, it says in the Shulchan Aruch, that you're allowed to bring the mace to the basic Kvaros. If that's your basic Kvaros, that you're allowed to do it. The Chavad HaMeis, you're allowed to do it. So they paskin like the Satmar Rebbe paskin. Others are paskin against Rav Moshe. That even in America, you're allowed to have a kavura on yontif sheni. So yesh v'yesh, a different minhagim in America. So, but this has a plays out in terms of aninus also. So let's say you live in a community where nobody does kavuras on yontif sheni. Like most of our communities, it's almost unheard of to have a kavura on yontif sheni. So what's the halacha? But theoretically, you could have a kavura. So is there an aninus? Is there no aninus? There are Moshe Paskin that, in effect, he says, if you follow my tzak, that we just don't have kavuras anymore. Yontif sheni. So the middle for us, yontif sheni is like Shabbos. And basically, for us, yontif sheni is like yontif rishon. So we're not going to do it. The bottom line, first comes to show, we're not going to have a kavura. So then, this is not as man kavura. It's not as man kavura. So then, it's not as man of aninus as well. Of course, those who live in those communities where they will do kavuras. And of course, it's like a regular weekday. If you're planning on doing a kavura, so then the dinim of aninus will apply. So we've been talking a lot about the dinim of aninus. We talked very, very quickly what they are. So we said, b'kit the nimrat, there's an isser of loss of the ayin, and there's a isser of doing mitzvahs. So the isser of doing loss of the ayin is a very common mistake. People think that the isser of loss of the ayin has something to do with avelus. It's not true. But the reason why the Onanim don't have Bosa V'Yayin is not because they're sad, so to speak, because of what they lose. The Yisra of Bosa V'Yayin is because a person sits down and has a whole big meal of Bosa V'Yayin, so they're going to get involved in the food and they're going to end up not taking care of the Torah Chiyameis. So there's nothing to do with Avelos. Haraya, it's Heptagoma for an Avel to eat meat and to drink wine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with an Avel during Shiva eating meat and drinking wine. In fact, we'll see down the line that there's one opinion of Rishon that says that the Sudas Havroah should not have Yayin. You should not give them a little bit of wine to dull the senses a little bit, to get drunk, but to help them lenachem as the other a little bit. So the Isser of Bosa V'Yayin has nothing to do with Avelus. The Isser of Bosa V'Yayin is Aninus oriented. It's not Avelus oriented. That's why the reason why we refrain from Bosa V'Yayin during the 9 days also probably has nothing to do with Avelus. It's not Avelus to say. It's probably based on a different story. It's based on the Gemara, the third paragraph of the Tashra, where the Gemara tells us that at the time of the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, so there were a group of individuals who decided they're going to stop eating Basar and stop drinking Yayin in the open void. Because how could it be that Karbanos were brought from Basar and the Yayin was brought in the Mizbeach? How could we go ahead and have Basar V'Yayin? It's inappropriate after the Chorban to indulge ourselves in Basar V'Yayin. So the Chachamim, when they heard about this, so they asked the people, you know, what you're doing is a good idea, then you shouldn't eat fruit either, because Bikurim used to be brought, and now there's no Beis HaMikdash. So people said, you're talking right, we're not going to eat fruit anymore. So then the Chacham said to them, you shouldn't eat bread anymore, because they used to bring karbanos, karban mincha, not going to eat bread. So they said, you're talking right, we're not going to eat bread anymore. So then the Chacham said to them, how can you drink water? Because they used to have a Nisach HaMayim, and now there's no Nisach HaMayim anymore, how can you drink water? They realized that they couldn't do that. They realized, they said, you know what? They asked the Chacham, so Taka, what should we do? So the Chacham said to them, in theory you're right, but the Gzeirish Ein Rov Tzibi Chom Mahamad Bata. We're not going to make life impossible for Klal Yisrael. We're not going to insist that people can't eat meat, and can't drink wine, and can't eat fruit, and can't eat bread, and can't drink water. You have to live. Even if there's a Chorban, you still have life has to go on. It's the Gzeirish Ein Rov Tzibi Chom Mahamad Bata. So the Rishonim right that those people were really right. I mean, in theory they were really right. But you can't put that into practice. It's not feasible. So therefore, it's not feasible 365 days a year. But 1 week, 9 days, then it is feasible. The first thing can go 9 days without dosa v'yayin. So during the 9 days, what we're doing is, in effect, we're recreating what those people in the days of the Churban really felt should have been the proper protocol for all of Klal Yisrael for their entire lives. It wasn't shayach, it wasn't feasible. So it's not really avelus per se. It's more of a zeichel mikdash. It's more of a zeichel to the lack of the bosa v'yayin. It's more zeichel mikdash. It's more kishuvah oriented rather than avelus per se oriented. That's why there really is no iser for an avel to eat to have bosa v'yayin. It's misa for an onein because of the technical problem in terms of the osik and the tzarchi ameis. And the onein is not permitted to do mitzvahs either. In fact, this is the machlokes in Rishonim. There are some Rishonim who say that an onein is allowed to do mitzvahs, it's just that he's potter. Because the Mishnah uses a lashon that Mishnah makes a little fun of potter the kriyishma min atfilin min atfilin. So the shan and the Rishonim, is he potter or is it really osur? So we assume in Shulchan Aruch that he's really osur, that he's not allowed to do mitzvahs, that to do mitzvahs is like a shtach to the mace. It's supposed to be involved in the tzarech ha-mace. And I can't take care of the mace, I gotta go down in shachris. That's not appropriate. That's a bizoyin ameis. You should be involved in the covet ameis right now. This cloud that we have that an onein doesn't do mitzvos, so there are a lot of details that the Achareim talk about. There's a long pesach tshuvas in the Siman Mananinos where he talks about certain details of mitzvos, which long b'shashalas, again, really go beyond the scope of learning on Tisha B'Av, about, let's say, an onein ate a meal when he was an onein, and now they had the kvura, and it's still within 72 minutes. Should he bench? Should he not bench? Well, let's say the onein went to the bathroom right before the kvura, and now, so he doesn't say asher yotza, but now when he after the kvura, should he say asher yotza? A lot of technical mitzvah-oriented types of shilas, which are not really avelos or aninas per se, which are fascinating in themselves, but not really for now. We also can talk about one of the shilas, which is important for us, which is relevant to Lachlan Mice in terms of Tisha B'Av, is the Havdalah issue. That the whole shilah, when a person is an owner of a Masar Shabbos, so he doesn't say Havdalah. So now the question is, so now after the Kvura, does he say Havdalah or not? That was a big machlekes of Rishonim. So some Rishonim say, oh, v'nilcha yidochet, since the mitzvah of Havdalah is really on Masar Shabbos, and if you can't say Masar Shabbos, although there is tashlumen for Havdalah till Tuesday, but if you were potter of the Ikra Zman, then there's no tashlumen, and we don't pass in that way. We pass in that the Ikra Zman is in fact until Tuesday, so for whatever reason, you didn't say Matzah Shabbos, whether you're chayiv, your potter, doesn't matter, you should say it right away. That's of course what I'm meaning, and that's why tonight, hopefully after the time this is over, so before anyone eats, why don't you try to remember to hear Havdalah, following those Rishonim. But there was one opinion in Rishonim that said there's no Havdalah at all. That's a whole v'nilcha yidocha, that there's no Havdalah whatsoever when an onein is an onein on Matzah Shabbos, or for that matter, when Tisha B'Av corresponds or coincides with Matzah Shabbos. So anyway, Yehuda, should we make a little air conditioner a little higher? Could we make the temperature a little lower now? Huh? Is it on purpose now? What's on? Well, that's low. That's the best it is. Okay. What? I know. Okay. Full in here. Okay, we'll try our best. Jennifer, I reiterate to the people who came late, anyone who feels that they have to leave at any point, please don't even think twice. Okay? So we gave at least a little bit of an overview in terms of Hilchos Aninos, and then we're going to try to start Hilchos Avelos proper. Hilchos Avelos, so the halacha tells us that the one who's close relative passes away, a whole series of different halachas they have to observe, the halachas of Shivan, the halachas of Shloshim, the parents, the halachas of Beis Chodesh. Hopefully as we go on, we'll talk about the different particular Isurim that apply during each of those periods of Aveilus. I want to talk just a little bit of really an introduction. Who is supposed to be Mis'abel exactly? Where does this come from, this whole notion of Aveilus? So the Gemara in Maseches Merikata tells us that the halacha is very simple, that whoever is considered to be a relative for the purposes of Tumas Kohanim, the model in Parshas Emor, so whoever the relative of Tumas Kohanim is considered to be a relative for the halachas of Aveilus as well. In fact, this led some Rishonim to learn that the whole institution of Aveilus is really deraisa, it's really an extension of Tumas Kohanim. The Rambam seems to learn that the mitzvah of being metameh for a Kohen to be metameh for an immediate relative is kavod hameis. So to Aveilus is considered to be like a kavod hameis type of a thing. So it's the same relatives. If a person is metameh for a father, for a mother, for a brother, for a sister, a child, so too a person would be mis'abel for those individuals as well. Other Rishonim say that the Gemara never meant to say that the Aveilus was their rice. That could be the whole Aveilus was only midirabonon, but the Chavim patterned who's considered to be a relative after those descriptions of relatives that appear in Parshas Emor. That's already a long discussion in terms of Aveilus, is it their rice, is it their abonon, but the bottom line is the basic model that we're speaking about are the relatives that appear in Parshas Emor. Then the Gemara just adds on that midirabonon, they added on a few other relatives. You can have So you have a half-brothers and half-sisters who may not necessarily be covered by the Parsha and Parsha Zemar, so maybe they're abundant, you have to be mis'abel for them also. Basically, the halacha is that a father, a mother, any kind of a brother, any kind of a sister, a son or a daughter or a spouse, so any of those, all those above individuals are required to be mis'abel. That's the basic halacha in terms of mis'abel. Then the Gemara has for us in Maseches Merikatan, the Gemara has a big chiddush that there's another type of aveilus as well for other extended relatives, and those are like secondary relatives, let's say for a grandparent or for a grandchild or nephews, things of that nature. So the Gemara says as follows, that any relative who you would be mis'abel for, if they die, if they themselves are sitting shiva, so you also have to be mis'abel. So basically, what does that mean, Tachlis? It means a grandparent. So if a person's father would die, he would be mis'abel. So if the grandfather, the father's father dies, so he also has to be mis'abel. So that halacha, the Gemara says, that only applies b'shnei hakrovim. That only applies if, let's say, if the person is together with his father in the same place, and his father said yeshiva, so he has to be sit shiva also. Shelo b'shnei hakrovim, then it doesn't apply. Why is that? So the Ramban explains that this is not really a din of aveilus, this is really a din of kavod hakrovim. A person's parent is sitting shiva, he should be dancing, he should be partying, it's not right, so he should get on the floor and take off his shoes and not wash, and whatever the parent doesn't do, so the child shouldn't do also. B'chvod ha-mis'apun. So the Ramban writes, learning in Maseches Kedushin last this year, about different people who can be meichel on their kavod. So the Ramban writes, ha-ovel shemachal ha-kvod ha-kvod ha-machal also. Let's say the father says to the son, listen, don't do many times. It's dead enough to I'm sitting shiva. Why should you sit shiva? So I don't want you to sit shiva. So the Ramban says, if the relative who's sitting shiva says, I don't want you, don't do me any favors, so then that din, that secondary din of aveilus, doesn't apply, because the whole halacha was only instituted with chavod ha-mis'ablim, so the mis'ablim themselves are meichel, go find the meichel. So therefore, the Rishonim write, based on this Ramban, that ad minig b'zman hazeh is, that everybody's meichel in this tremendous cover. The ad minig is, that relatives of meichel, that nobody wants their children or their nephews or whatever the extended relatives should be, nobody wants these people to be sitting shiva with them, so therefore this whole halacha doesn't apply b'zman hazeh. Nevertheless, the Ramon writes that there was a zeichet to this halacha, it was a minig that developed in the Ashkenazi communities as a little bit of a remembrance, a little bit of a zeichet to this halacha, that when a close relative is sitting shiva, so you also observe a quasi shiva. So the Ramon writes that the minig became that not to observe a full-fledged shiva, but at least until Shabbos, so let's say the person starts to shiva on Tuesday, so until Shabbos, so you don't wash, you don't change your clothes, certain things. You can learn, you can put on stone, you know, although the real halachas of shiva don't all apply, but a few assorted tidbits of shiva were accepted in many of the Ashkenazi communities. So there are different opinions in the poskim about how much this really applies to Zman HaZeh. Does this only apply literally to say Aveilim? Does this apply? But if I'm not together with my parents in the sitting shiva, how much of washing chalal? We'll get to the real Yisurim. People were talking about a real Aveil, there may be certain kulas under certain limited circumstances to wash for Aveil and Zman HaZeh. The switching of shirts may be mutab Zman HaZeh also for real Aveil. So we'll have to talk about that as we go on. So many of those minhagim that the Ramah quotes a little bit thrown into question, you know, about the parameters, about how much they really play out this man as that. So the Yesh V'Yesh, a different minhagim about this. But the idea, you know, whether one follows the exact meaning of the Ramah of Bizman Azeh, some other permutation of the meaning of the Ramah, the idea is definitely true. Namely, that when Rahman was fun, a relative of yours, a close relative, you know, usually ends up with a parent that's sitting Shiva, so child has to know it's not the time to be partying, it's not the time for him to be going throughout his normal business as usual. Doesn't mean that he has to keep available, it doesn't mean he has to sit on the floor with his parents, but there's a Imam Nechem Mitzara, Kibra Ve'im, we spent so much time this summer talking about, so Kibra Ve'im, Imam Nechem Mitzara, requires that the child should act appropriately during that time. So again, whether the particular problem of the Ramaz Minig are applicable all the time is somewhat questionable. As a general rule, so a person is required to observe Avelus for his Krovim. So nevertheless, there are certain individuals who act in very inappropriate ways, who in a sense lose that chus, that means they lose that technical requirement for their relative to observe Shiva for them. So we'll just talk a little bit in guidelines, and then before we actually put this, you know, practice halacha l'maisa, this is something like when we spoke with Kibra Ben, we spoke about the halacha of an Aviv who's a Rasha, so one has to be very, 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 very careful of his manas there before one invokes some of these principles l'maisa. Well, we'll just talk a little bit more theoretical. So the Gemara already in the Sechah Sanhedrin talks about an individual who's a parish medarche tzibur, the person who's really left a life of Torah mitzvahs, so a person who maybe halachically would be labeled as a rasha. So technically speaking, there really wouldn't be any avelus to such an individual. So Bizman Hazeh, as we've already said in the past, in other contexts, it's very, very hard to really apply that label in halacha of a rasha. First of all, 99.9% of the individuals who Nebuch was not as that, not yet showing Torah mitzvahs, it's not because they're rebellious, it's not because they're not mumrim, they're not doing anything that they think is wrong, they don't know, Pasha, Nebuch, Tina Shinishma, the famous Rambam says, and in the Chazamrim, that the first generation of the Karayim, so those individuals who mamish went off the Derech and made the Machlekes for the Torah Shemateh, so those individuals really have not very good things to say about them. But the Rambam writes that the Bnei HaKaroyim, the next generation, what do you want from them? This is what their parents taught them, a life of not observing Torah mitzvahs properly. So Nebuch, what do you want? How much more so individuals who are not second generation, the third, fourth, fifth generation already of people who have left the life of Torah mitzvahs? For such individuals, it's very, very hard to invoke the principle of calling such a person a Russian in the classic sense of the halachic word. They often also, the postman points out, that sometimes there can be a tremendous Chil Hashem in this area, that even by people who are not really Shema Torah Mitzvah, so some are Avelus, they take very seriously. A lot of people take Avelus seriously, the same reason they take Yerushite seriously, they take Kaddish seriously. People are afraid of death. That's the bottom line. As the phrase goes, there's no atheist in a foxhole. So, the same idea. The people who don't necessarily keep Shabbos and Kaddish and anything else, but certain, you know, anything has to do with death. People shake, rightfully so. So sometimes you'd have a very, very terrible situation where you'd have different family members and the people who are not Shema Torah Mitzvah, so they're keeping Yeshiva Kedas Uchadim, and all of a sudden this guy went off to Yeshiva, he became a Lamda, and he says, no, I don't keep Shiva because this person who dies in Russia, it's not going to go over very well. There'll be a tremendous Chil Hashem. Besides the fact that it's probably been assigned not true all the time. In the group of the cases, the people with manas are not really halachically Rishayim. So although in theory there's halacha parish b'dachas tzibur, in terms of practically speaking, it doesn't apply all that much. There is a very, very tragic situation that the Rishonim discuss about somebody who commits a terrible, terrible aveira, the aveira abed atzmo l'das, the person, Nebuch commits suicide. So what is halacha concerning such a person in terms of observing aveilus? So in fact, in Machlokes, Harishonim is in the Rambam and the Ramban about whether the Avelus is supposed to be observed for a person who is Ma'abed Atzmo Das, a person who committed suicide. In Shulchan Aruch, strictly speaking, we paskin that there's no Avelus for Ma'abed Atzmo Das. Nevertheless, the Chassam Sofer writes in a tshuva that very often, Bizman Azeh, we will invoke the Dinim of Avelus for the following reason, a fascinating line of reasoning. We have a clown Avelus called Allah Kadibri Amekel Ba'ova. Whenever you have a Shaila, Machwekas Nuchas Avelus, so we tend to go Lakula Nuchas Avelus. We'll see as we go on, there may be certain exceptions to that rule, but usually when there's a Machwekas and Nuchas Avelus, so we tend to go Lakula. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch writes, as Machlekes the Rambam and the Ramban, is there avelus from Avodas Vodas? And the Shulchan Aruch says, we suffik it off to be noig avelus. Suffik avelus l'kula. So if you write in a tshuva, suffik avelus l'kula, but suffik covered Yisrael with the chumrah. Namely, if the relatives who are Nebuchadnezzar have to deal with the tragedy itself as such aggravation, so to go ahead and turn around and tell them that there's no avelus, so it's going to be even more agitating for them, it's going to be more embarrassing for them. So Chassam Sofer says that the Rav in each case has to size up and see whether the correct psak maybe should be the chumrah, that we should insist that there should be avelus to in effect protect to some degree the honor of the living relatives. And for other reasons, this halacha that there's no avelus for a suicide is kimat not shayach, this not azeh, because the post can say that in order to be labeled as a suicide, based on a Masechet Smachos, you have to be really, really certain beyond the shadow of a doubt that the person really did commit suicide, something like the equivalent of a suicide note or something like that. But if it's just circumstantial evidence, so we'll try to explain it away, even if it looks like a suicide, but we'll cover it over a little bit, unless it's really crystal clear that it was a suicide. And the Pope said, let's say the person was alive by das, let's say the person was so agitated to the point where they would be labeled as someone who halachically is just not responsible for their actions. It becomes a very, 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 very difficult, call to make. Obviously, anybody who's committed suicide is very agitated. The question is that really a labor das or not? So it depends. It's going to be a very, very hard, hard call to say. There are some posts that we even say that you can only label someone as an abadas or a das in this area if he was given hasra, if he actually warned them before him, like the chayim is based in. It's also not going to be too shy. So again, practically speaking, to put in this halacha, that won't be available, so it's usually not going to apply. But in theory, there may be such a cloud, at least according to some Rishonim. There's another, also a tragic situation where there's no available, where that's when a baby dies very, very young. So many of you have learned through the Sugya in different places, and Masechet Shabbos, and Masechet Chulin appears, and I think last year, and the meal, I think we spoke about a little bit, that if a baby dies within the first 30 days of its life, so we suspect that the baby may not really have been a viable birth to begin with. So if it wasn't really destined to live altogether, what we call in halacha a nesel, so for a nesel, technically speaking, there's not going to be any avelus for. So how do you know whether the baby's a nesel or not? So the Gemara gives us guidelines. The Gemara says that if it doesn't survive the first 30 days, then we assume it may have been a nesel. If it already survived the first 30 days, then we assume it was not a nesel, and then the halacha is it would be regular avelus. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us, so let's say we know for a fact that this baby was a full-term baby. There's no question that it was able to live. We know it was a full-fledged pregnancy. So the Gemara says it's called kola chadasha. So then we assume that the baby is a regular baby, a healthy baby, and something goes wrong afterwards. So that doesn't detract from the avelus. So even if such a baby dies in the first day after it was born, there would be full-fledged avelus if it's kola chadasha. This is a big question, Bizman Azeh. What's called Kolo Chadasha? So the Ramah, in a different context, not in Hilchos Avelos, but in Hilchos Chalitza, the Ramah writes that if you know for a fact the mother's in the ninth month already, so you know that's a normal baby, barring anything really, really out of the ordinary. So that's a big shayla of Bizman Azeh. So we usually know, usually the doctors can document the pregnancy pretty much almost to the day, Bizman Azeh. So to turn around and say that our babies are not kolah chadashim is a little bit shaky. So what should come out is that Rechman Lutzman, a baby dies in the first 30 days, so this whole halacha shouldn't apply, because our baby is a kolah chadashim. So that's a shaylah. So the minhag is not really like that. Usually we assume, like in the olden days, that until the baby lives for 30 days, so I think that's what people are knowing, until the baby lives for 30 days, there's not going to be any avelus. Now at least we have some idea as to who is supposed to be mitzvah in terms of what kind of relatives, some people who are exceptions possibly to the rule of avelus. When exactly does avelus begin? What point does do the halachas of avelus begin? So when we speak about the halachas of avelus, again we'll talk about them hopefully as we go on, the prohibition of washing and the prohibition of washing clothes and the prohibition of limud haTorah and shir l'sholem, all those isuri avelus. So when exactly do those isurim kick in? So there was a big machlokes that we've shown him, that some Rishonim said that those Yisurim begin already at the time of Nisa. I mean, the person could be like an Onan and an Oval at the same time. So as soon as the person dies, the Melech dies, so then the unique halachas of Aninus kick in, namely the Isser of Mitzvos and the Isser of Basa V'Yayin. In addition to the unique halachas of Aninus, the Yisurim of Avelus kick in as well. So your imam can't do anything. You have the worst of both worlds. That's what some Rishonim held. And other Rishonim seem to say no. Other Rishonim seem to say that the Isuri Avelus don't really begin until a much later point. And what is a later point? So it's usually assumed that that later point is Kavura. Even according to those who say that the Isuri Avelus start from the time of Nisa, they agree that the counting of Shiva doesn't start until the Kavura. So everybody agrees that the Kavura is critical in terms of the Avelus. According to some, that's when the Isuri Avelus begin. According to others, even though the Isuri Avelus may have started beforehand, but the Minyan Avelus, the Sviris Avelus, doesn't start until much later, until the time of Kavura. We're knowing the Chumra and the Shaya. The Ramah paskins that some say even the Shulchan Aruch may have agreed to this, but the Ramah says in the Feirush that the Isuri Avelus begin at the time of Nisa. So basically what that means is, there's like somewhat of a common misconception. Many people think that, well, once the relative, sometimes what happens, a relative dies, and now you call the Chevah Kedisha, so, you know, the relatives have really not that much to do for that day, and the Kavura is going to be tomorrow. So they know that the Shiva doesn't start until the Kavura, so they figure, well, I'm not going to be able to get a haircut for a while, so I might as well get a haircut now. I'm not going to be able to shave for a while, I might as well shave now. I might as well take a shower now. Everything that I'm not going to be able to do for a while, I might as well do now. So the Ramah says that that's not right. The Ramah paskins that the Isuri Avelus do apply from the time of the Misa. The Shiva doesn't technically start counting until the time of the Kavura, but the Isuri Avelus do begin even at the time of the Misa. Well, I've been using the phrase Kavura, so that's the phrase that we're familiar with, but that's not the phrase the Gemara uses. The Gemara uses the phrase Stimas HaGolel. The Gemara says that it's the time of Stimas HaGolel when the Shiva really begins, that according to some, the Isuri Shiva begin, or according to others, when the counting of the Shiva begins, Stimas HaGolel. What exactly is Stimas HaGolel? So those who went to the beginning of the Ksubis may remember this, or the Brochus, this Machlekes appears. The Rashi says Stimas HaGolel means when the Oron is closed. As soon as the coffin is closed, that's already the beginning of the Avelus. It comes an unbelievable Kiddush, according to Rashi. And once the Oron is closed, and the Oron is closed way before the Kavura. As soon as they finish the Torah, they put the Nes inside, they close the Oron, finished. So according to Rashi, the way some Rishonim learn Shana Rashi, the Ramban and Shana Rashi would come out, that's when the Shiva begins. So Taisa says that's not true. Taisa says that Stimas HaGolel means when you finish the Kavura, when you close up the... Taisa says Golo means like the stone that was put for kind of lure to Evan up there, the air. They would put a stone on top of the Kever. So we put a stone in Matzeva much later, but in those days we used to put a stone up at the end of the Kavura. So that's what Stimas HaGolel means. That's what we call today Kavura. So that's how we assume the Allah like tells us, we pass in Shulchan Aruch, that the Shiva starts at the time of the Kavura, really the Gemar of the Kavura. So this gets a very tricky question. What point exactly is really the Gemar of the Kavura? So sometimes this Shaila, a question of a few minutes, can make all the difference in the world. Because we know that in Avelus it's a Mikdash Yom Kekulo, so the day of the Kavura itself counts the first day of Shiva. So sometimes in the wintertime you can have a Kavura that's going late, and Shkia is, say, 4:30, so you can have many of the Batei Kavaras in New York, you won't have the Shaila, because the grave diggers, they won't work so late in the afternoon. They won't schedule such a late Kavura, but there are other, by certain Batei Kavaras that are not bound by the union rules, maybe Yavin or other areas, as well you have the Shaila. So you can have very often a Shaila, so you'll have a Kavura that's taking place right around Shkia time. So in a sense, you want the Kavura to be over before Shkia, because if you have it over before Shkia, then you'll be able to count that day as the first day of Shiva. Ultimately, you'll be able to cut off, in effect, the day of Shiva. So this becomes a technical question. Where do you draw the line? Is the Gemara Kavura, is that once you start to put dirt on top of the Aron, once you finish on top of the Aron, once everybody walks away? You have detailed questions as to what point you consider to be the Stimas HaGolel. But the basic Stimas HaGolel, which is important for us to know, is that Stimas HaGolel is synonymous with the Kavura. So at the time of the Kavura, that's basically when the Chol HaDeis, the Isuri HaDeis begin. There's no question about that. At that point, the Isuri HaDeis begin. And at that point, when the Minyan HaShiva, when the counting of the Shiva begins from the point of Stimas HaGolel. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Moed Katan that sometimes you can have a situation where the Shiva begins even before the actual Kavura, and that's if you have individuals who are not going to the Kavura. So this is very common in the days of Chazal, it's common as well. And also sometimes, in the days of Chazal, so they would bury Nason in Eretz Yisrael, like we learned the story in Kedusha, Rav Asi's mother, they put the Aron to Eretz Yisrael. So a person would die in Bavel, So when they would escort the Aron to Eretz Yisrael, not everybody was able to track. It was a long trip, you know, from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. So some of the relatives went along, somebody went along, but many of the relatives didn't go along. So at what point do the relatives who are staying behind, at what point do they begin their avelos? So the relatives who are going with the Aron, so they're still owning them, they're still either owning them or they're in limbo, but they're not really avelim yet. I mean, the Shiva doesn't start for them because they didn't do the Kfura yet. But what about the relatives who, they're not going to the Kfura, they're not shaykhah to the Kfura. So what point does the Shiva begin for them? So the Gemara uses the phrase, Mechima hadrisim apaychu, at the time when they turn their heads away, when they turn back from the Shar Ha'ir, so they would escort the mace to the gates of the city, and then when they reached the gates of the city, they would turn around, they would turn back. So at that point, that's called Madrisu Apaychu, that's considered to be the Tchila Ta'avelos. So what would be the modern day application of that? So the stumble would be as follows. Let's say if somebody is Mifter in New York and they're going to be taken to Eretz Yisrael, so let's say some of the relatives are not going along. So the relatives who are staying behind, so the stumble, they usually escort the mace to the airport, and at some point where security says, okay, Ad Kan V'lo Yosa, you can't go any further. So the relatives who are not going along on the plane, so they turn around. So at that point, if they turn around, so that's the Klilas HaShiva for them. That's when the Yisuri Avelos L'chol HaDeis begins. And it's at that point that the counting of Shiva, that would be the first day of Shiva. So even though you have a situation, let's say the Kavura is not going to be for another day or two, so it doesn't matter. They already started to count the first day of Shiva from the Hadrichu HaPaycha, from Achzoras HaPonim, because that's the modern day equivalent of escorting the mace of the Shar Ha'ir that we have today. There were some poskim who threw into question whether this is really correct, whether this analogy is really right, this man is there. Some poskim said as follows. So when do we find that Chazal said that the Achzoras HaPonim is the halacha equivalent of the Kvura, and that's going to suffice to begin the Avelos? That's only because the relatives who stayed behind in the olden days, they didn't know when the Kfura was going to be. The people who were staying behind in Babel, they didn't have a clue when the Kfura was going to be. So if you don't know when the Kfura is going to be, so the next best thing is that Zeres HaPonim. But let's say Bizman HaZeh, we know, not only do we know exactly when the Kfura is going to be, more often than not, they're listening on the phone. The people in the basic Kfura say, sure, I have a cell phone. And the people in America listening to their stadium, and they know exactly when the Kfura is going to take place. So maybe we should argue that this whole din that appears in the Gemara, like having the people from Babel, is a little higher than Yalim Bizman HaZeh. The whole thing doesn't apply to Bizman HaZeh, because Bizman HaZeh, we have modern-day communication. We know exactly when the Kfura is going to take place. So some posts can throw into question this whole din Bizman HaZeh. So what would that mean? That would mean that the relatives who are staying behind are in limbo. They don't start the Shiva yet. So they're waiting around, and then in the day or two, so then when they get the call that the Kavura was complete, not only then do they begin their count of Shiva also. So Rav Moshe disagreed with this. Rav Moshe, this was not correct. Rav Moshe said that the din of Asaras Panim is not because you don't know when the Kavura is, but you do know, you don't know. Irrelevant. He has a bias for this. He assumed, like the other folks came, that Asaras Panim applies in full force to Zman HaZeh. That's what our minig is. The minig in America, I think today, is like the stock of Rav Moshe. We do invoke the din of Achzoras Panim Bizman HaZeh, that at the point when the relatives turn back from the airport, so we assume that's considered to be the beginning of the Avelos. That's the equivalent of the Kavura per se. Sometimes you have a situation where it's not going to be a Kavura. Why is it not going to be a Kavura? So as we mentioned before, that the body is lost. The body is lost at sea, or the body is lost in a building collapse, whatever it is. They don't have the body right now. So when does the Shiva begin? So in case of the Maharam, so at what point do the relatives begin Shiva? So we said that Kozman, that there's no body, there's no people, there's no serving food to be metaphor with. So everybody agrees that it's not going to be Aninus at that point. So just because there's no Aninus, doesn't necessarily mean that the Shiva begins. It could be that the people are in limbo. So at what point do you say that the Shiva actually begins? So the Rishonim say it's based on at the point when the relatives give up any hope of ever getting the body back. It's called Nisyashim L'Kovro. Once the relatives are Nisyash, once they give up hope, they despair, they're not going to find the body. So once they reach that realization that they're not going to find the body anymore, so then and only then does the Shiva begin. That's when, at that point, that's like the halacha equivalent of the Kvura, Nisyashim L'Kovro. The only possible exception of this is that what doesn't appear in the Gemara, this particular halacha, it appears in the Gaonim and the Rishonim have this idea that this halacha could become a little bit tricky. That means to invoke an Avelos without a body here can be very tricky, because if there's no body here, you have to always be worried maybe the person isn't really dead. So what are the ramifications of observing Shiva? The person's not dead? All right. So you sat on the floor for a week. So you didn't learn for a week. You didn't take a shower for a week. I think all the relatives would be more than happy if the person comes back. But there is a potential disaster that can happen by being knowing Shiva when a person is not dead. Namely, what if the person who we're observing Shiva for is a married man? So if we're going to be observed Shiva because we think this person is dead, and we think that his body is lost, and we can't find it in the rubble, we can't find it out at sea, so we're going to assume, well, he's probably dead in the Mishashim Lekavro, and we're going to observe Shiva, so that could be very, very terrible. Why? Because if we're going to observe Shiva for a married man, so everyone's going to realize what that must mean, that he must be dead. And what that's going to mean is that his wife may remarry based on the fact that we're telling them to observe Shiva. And that may not necessarily be true, because there are two prachim in Masechet Yevamos, the last two prachim in Yevamos, which talk about all the unfortunate, gory details as to what's necessary to really halakhically identify that a person is really dead. Because the whole sugya is in the Gemara, that of a person who's lost at sea, and a person who's other events that happen. At what point does the Beis Din say that we are deciding up in Din that the person is really not here, even without actual evidence of a body itself? Those are very, very complicated, very, very tragic sugyas. So those sugyas play a role now in Hilchos Avelos, because the Rishonim developed a klal that we're not going to let you observe Avelos unless we are certain the person is dead. It shouldn't leave it there nichshol in the realm of Eishes Ish. So that's a minig. It's not a din in the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't make this equation. The Rishonim made up this equation to prevent any nichshol, any stumbling block, chalila happening of the married woman remarrying before it's really been ascertained properly that the husband is really dead. There was some poskim who said that this minig applies even if the man is not married, and applies even if it's a woman who died, and it's a low plug. I mean, so as long as we don't have absolute perfect evidence that convinces us beyond the shadow of a doubt the person's dead, evidence enough that we would accept to be master a woman to get married, we will not let you observe Avelos. And others say no, that the minig only existed if the mace is a married man, when there's real fear of a mishal. If it's a woman, it's a single guy, so what's there to be afraid of? So you're observing that. If you think he's dead, if it appears to us that he's dead, it appears that the body's missing, it appears that it's Yashim Lekavro, so we're going to let you observe Avelos. This is a different poskim, have different opinions about this, but at least for a married woman, everybody agrees we should follow this minug that we don't observe Avelos until we're really convinced, for Hilchos Aguna's purposes, that the person is actually dead. Fortunately, anyone who knows the shilas that came up after September 11th, so many of them were revolved around these issues. Unfortunately, there were many married men who are missing, and in absence of a body, it becomes very, very tricky as to what halach is. There are complicated sugyas in the Gemara about if a person was in a furnace, or a person was in a lion's den, a person was in the ocean, different complicated sugyas. At what point can we make the statement that the person is really is no longer alive? So that is important both in terms of being master of the Eishes Ish to remarry, and it's also going to spill over in terms of Avelos, according to what we follow, that we're not going to be knowing Avelos, Kol Zman, that we're not really convinced that the person is actually dead. Before we speak about the surim of Avelos per se, in terms of what the Avel can do, we can't do in a Hilchot Avelos, just a little bit about the Minyan HaAvelos, in the sense of the counting of the 7 days of Avelos, for the basic days of Shiva. So in fact, the Rishalmi tells us that there's a source in the Chumash itself for the notion of 7 days of Avelos. The Pesuk in Parshas Vayechi, Vayos La'aviv Avel Shivas Yamin. So the Rishalmi seems to say that Avelos is a deraisa based on that. And others disagree. Others say, So it's probably only in the Rabbanan, there may be certain aspects of Avelos of the Araisa, but the notion of Shiva, the idea of the sitting Shiva, the Shiva in the Avelos, so it's most probably only in the Rabbanan. But it's important to figure out, Cheshbon out, how exactly do you count out these 7 days? So we said we know when the Avelos begins. It starts from either the time of the Kavur under normal circumstances, but in an abnormal circumstances, it could start from halakha equivalent of Kavur, either halakha equivalent of Hachzaras Panim that we mentioned, going back from the airport, or the halacha equivalent of a misyashim of the kavro in the case of the missing body. So, but once we know that the avelus begins, so then it's fairly simple. Seems to be fairly straightforward. You just count those 7 days, and then the avelus is over. So not so simple. So sometimes you can have a strange situation, which is a fairly common child of this man hazeh, where you can have different relatives having different counts. It's very mundane thing. It's a very strange thing that different relatives could be up to, in a sense, different days of Shiva. How can that be? Different relatives up to different days of Shiva. So the Gemara describes as follows. Let's say you have, in the olden days, communication was very, very schwach. So you had a few people, some of the members of the family lived in one town, and somebody else lived in another town. So all the people lived in this particular town, so they were there when the relative passed away, they were there at the Kavura, so they started counting Shiva. So they're up to already the fifth day of Shiva. All of a sudden, somebody else comes in, another relative comes in, our brother, whatever it is, our son, whoever it is, comes in, and he comes into town, and they tell him, Kavalt, terrible news, that you just lost your relative, everyone, all your other relatives in the middle of sitting Shiva. So the question is, so where does this guy fit into the picture now? So obviously, he has to start being Noyik Shiva right now, but what's his count of Shiva? Is he up to day one? Because for him, he just found out. Or do you say no? He becomes Bobdo to the other relatives. He's up to day five. So whatever day they're up to, he's up to also. So where does his Shiva fit in under these types of circumstances? So the Gemara tells us that sometimes Halacha says that the new relative who comes becomes Bobdo to the previous relatives, becomes part of their count, which is really a sense of Kula, because rather than having him start from scratch, having him start from day one, he could pick up along with them and only have 2-3 days of Shiva. So what conditions are necessary in order for him to become Bottel to their Avelus? So the Gemara says that number one, he has to come while they're still in the middle of Avelus. If he comes when the Shiva's over, so then you can't say, well, since he found them on day 14 of Shloshim, so he could start day 14 of Shloshim. That's not true. They have to still be in the middle of Shiva. What's considered to be the middle of Shiva? So Machlek is after them. We pass in until the morning of the seventh day. Because once the Avelim get up already on the seventh day, we'll talk about that a little bit later, about getting up early, once the Avelim get up, then the Shiva is over, and even if he comes in the afternoon of the seventh day, that's too late. But if he comes in the sixth day, or even in the very, very early morning of the seventh day, so he's still considered to be bumped up to the other relatives, he can in effect shave off a few days of Shiva. Number two, the Gemara says he has to be within a Mokam Karav. It has to be that it came from fairly close by. If he came from very, very far away, so that doesn't apply. That's a big shout of his man Azah. What's that called? What's called Makam Karov? Because the Rishonim describe Makam Karov as being the amount of time it takes a person to travel in one day. Walking, driving, flying, everything changes. The whole geography. We live in a different kind of a world, this man is there. Then the Rishonim say that the Salah only, the Gemara says the Salah only applies if there's a Gobel Habayis, if there's somebody who is clearly running the show, the person who's really in charge, making the decisions, the financial decisions, other decisions for the family now. So if the Gal Habayis started the Shiva early, so then if the newcomer is not a Gal Habayis, he's a Kapha Habayis, so then and only then he becomes Bottle to the original relatives. Those three conditions have to be met. It has to be that they're still in the middle of observing Shiva. And number two, it has to be Bobim up from Karov. And number three, it has to be the situation of Gal Habayis. So each one of those conditions are sometimes a little bit shaky. There's not as that this particular aspect of the Shaila is Kim'at Nashach. Just about never happens because of modern communication. This case talking about that the guy didn't know. He had no clue that his relative died, and he finds out, Baruch Habu, he arrives in town, and he realizes that his relative died, and the other relatives are up to the fifth day of Shiva. It's not Shaykh that should happen with Manazeh. What the much more common scenario is Manazeh is the second half of the Sugya. Those who learned the Sugya in my cult, and this is the hardest Sugya, I think, in Hilchos Avelos. It's called the Sugya of Holach Vel Havayis Aves HaKvaros. A long sugya with 5 of them shatim in the Rishonim, a long, long, long shach in Yerodeya. I'll try to get the nimitz that plays out halacha l'maaseh for us as man hazeh. So the Gemara and the Rishonim discuss the second half of the shaila as follows. Let's say, not that the new relative comes and he has no idea what was going on and he finds out now that his relative died. No. He knew his relative died. He was there together for Shas Misa. Everybody was there together. And now he went along to the Beit HaKavaros, and everybody else stayed behind. So what happens? If you go with the halachas that we spoke about before, that if you go to the Beit HaKavaros, so Shiva starts at the time of Kavura. If you don't go to the Beit HaKavaros, so Shiva starts at the time of Achzaras Panim, so now you have a muddy situation, a strange situation. You have different relatives of different counts. So what happens? So one group of relatives, the relatives that went off to Eretz Yisrael, so they're going to start their Shiva on Tuesday. Whereas the relatives who stay behind, they're going to start their Shiva on Sunday. How you talking about that? So one group of relatives are observing Shiva starting from Sunday, another group starting from Tuesday. Sounds very, very bizarre. Well, it depends. If the relatives who went to Eretz Yisrael to the Gevurah Taka stay in Eretz Yisrael, they don't come back, so yeah, that's for them. So they started from Tuesday from the Gevurah, the first group started from Sunday from the Chazaras Panim, and sure, that's it. You have two different counts. They'll end on Monday, they'll end on Shabbos, it's not a problem. But what's the din? If the relatives who went along to Eretz Yisrael, they come back, and now they come back in the middle of Shiva, and they find their other relatives had already started Shiva. They already started Shiva. There was no chiddush that said they knew they started Shiva. They left, they started Shiva as soon as they knocked upon him from the airplane. So now what's the halacha? So at least according to the Psach of the Shach talks things that under this circumstance, again, the classic scenario is not as that. But so you have a person dies and you have a Levaya in New York on Sunday, and Sunday afternoon they take the mate to the airport, and the flight leaves Sunday afternoon, and the relatives who stay behind start Shiva Sunday afternoon. That's the first day of Shiva. So for them, there's no question the Shiva will be over in Shabbos. That'll be the last day of Shiva. The relatives who go along to Eretz Yisrael, the Kavur is not going to be till Monday afternoon. So for them, they start Shiva on Monday. And now they come back to America on Tuesday. So they're back Wednesday, back Wednesday morning. So what day are they up to? Do they follow their count of Shiva? Or do they now become Batel to the relatives who got the head start on them? So the Shach Paskin, that in that circumstances, when they were all together at the Nisa, and they all basically started together, and now each one went to their own counts, did they all get back together again? So then you follow the earlier count. That was the Pesach of the Shach, and everyone picks up the count of the earlier relatives, and the relatives who went there as well, in effect, shaved off the day of Shiva. I mean, they lost a day or two, whatever it was, they lost a day or two of Shiva. They become Batel to the original relatives who stayed behind. That was the Pesach of the Shach. That's a many poskim hold. Not everybody holds this way. Machlekes like the Machaber and the Ramah and others. Moshe didn't poskim this way, so there are some who say that the relatives who come back have to keep the extra day of Shiva. There are different minhagim adayim as there in Klai. So you may have seen this in sometimes go to Menachem Avil. You may have seen like signs on the door or something that says that plenty and plenty will be sitting Shiva until Tuesday, and plenty will be sitting Shiva until Wednesday. So Chayitavim. So that's kind of a sign. Is the Pesach of Ramosh in effect. If you hold like the Shach, that would never make any sense as much as that, to have such a scenario. But that type of a scenario of an extra person chapping around the extra day, so that's those people who are not accepting the Shach and Allah. Those who follow the Shach, so it would always end up with the uniform Shiva basically at the end, unless the relatives didn't return. If they don't return, then they stay according to the Israel Cheshbon, and the Americans stay according to the American Cheshbon. Shiva ends at the last day of Shiva. There was a chagas at Tanoim in my cotton and said Teras about whether you need the last full day of Shiva in order for Shiva to end, or whether Shiva ends, so we apply the principle, whether we apply the principle of Mikta Sayom Kekulo. So even the part of the seventh day is already considered to be enough for the Shiva to be concluded. We pass him Allah Kekulo, Allah Kedivir Mekab Aval. This is one of the cases where the Gemara says explicitly that Allah Kedivir Mekab Aval, that we're lenient in this Machlokes. We pass him that the Shiva ends at the beginning of the seventh day, Miktas Ayom Kekulo. What exactly does Miktas Ayom Kekulo mean? When exactly does that apply? So there was a big machlekes that we showed him about whether Miktas Ayom Kekulo applies on the morning of the seventh day, or whether Miktas Ayom Kekulo applies on the night before. So this is a shah, Alam de Shashal, this is really more of a nida sugya than a vela sugya. That's what the sugya originally appears in Miktas Ayom Kekulo. But the bottom line is, in Uchas Avela says, Machlekes HaRishonim, the Ramban and others, about whether Mikta Kekulo applies, and neither applies in the morning. In Shulchan Aruch, we paskin that it applies in the morning. The Avelim on the seventh night have to wait until the following morning before they complete their Avelim. Nevertheless, if the Keshuvah quotes from the Radvaz that says, Atinta to Machlekes, and even though the minig has become to be Chumrah like the Shulchan Aruch, but sometimes if observing those extra night of Avelim is going to interfere with Tzorcha Nitzvah, so then we would tell the Avelim not to be knowing Avelim at night, to rely on the Mekilim, to rely on the Ramban, those Rishonim will say, Mikzev Gulo applies at night. What would that mean practically? The guy wants to learn. He's already 6 days behind the Yermis. He wants the Chab to learn already. Or let's say sometimes the makom owner hasn't been his wife ready for a week. So those kinds of circumstances, one would be able to permit even the night of the seventh. That's the bishachiva close. So I think that the minhag today is not that way, and I think the reason is, I think the minhag is correct not to rely on this kula, based on the following. The Ramban has a comment in Teres HaAdam. Ramban writes that if you look at the Gemara says at what point precisely does the Avelus really begin? So the Gemara says, Miktas Yom Kula, and the Gemara says, by the time of Amidas HaMenachemim, when the people are coming to the Menachem Avel, when they get up, when they stand up, when they leave, so at that point, we say, Miktas Yom Kula. My high, what do you need Amidas HaMenachemim for? It's a mudmous thing. So the Ramban writes, technically, you should really say Miktas Yom Kula, either at the beginning of the night, beginning of the day, whatever it is, but it's going to be a very, very strange situation that the Avel got up, he already put his chair, shiva chair went, he's already put his shoes on, he's already in the shower, and someone's going to come and be menachem of him. You'll be knocking on the door, be menachem of him. It's a design. The chukuk chlula. The Ramban says the chachamim were mesaken that until the last menachem comes. I mean, there's always someone who doesn't know the right day. Comes the next day also. But I'm saying until the menachem, whatever the stage of the normal menachem is, so even though it's technically mitzvah yom kukulo, you shouldn't rely on mitzvah yom kukulo until I meet a menachem. That's why I think this man is there. We have Menachemim who come the seventh day in the morning, okay? as a minion in his house on the seventh morning, so the Menachemim are going to come the next morning. So how could we let him the night before? So what's going to happen? 10 o'clock at night, everyone goes home, so 10 o'clock he's going to go sit and learn Daf Yomi. How could that be? How can you let the guy violate the Dinim of Shiva, and then turn around and let him accept the condolences the next morning? It's a sphera. So since our minig is to continue the nicham until the following morning, I think that cool the radvas falls by the wayside. I think that the olim is not knowing that way. I think that we assume that until the seventh morning, until amidat menachem, so the ramah quotes that what if you have a situation where there are no menachem on the seventh day? The ramah writes that in his town in Krakow in Poland, so the menachem didn't come on the seventh day. So what do you do? So what do you wait for? There's no amidat menachem. What do you wait for? So the Ramah writes, you have to chesbina. How long would a midas haMenachem take? How long would it normally take on a regular day? So the Ramah writes that when do the people come to the Menachem Avel? Usually the minyan, right after the minyan. So the Ramah says it takes a little bit of time. So from Neitz Chacham until, I don't know, half hour. Since I'm first davening in your town. So half hour, 45 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour, whatever it is. That's the amount of a midas haMenachem. The Ramah says that the Olam Zach, the Olam says, you have to wait an hour on the seventh day. You have to observe an hour of Shiva on the seventh day. So the Ramah says it's not... It's not 60 minutes, an hour. An hour is just the time that usually approximates how long it takes for people to finish davening. But if it takes less, there is no din of waiting a full hour. And again, there's not a zah, it's usually not shayach, because if there's a minyan in the Shiva house, there usually will be a minyan on the seventh day also. So after the minyan is over, the menachem will sit down and give a short nichum avail. At that point, when they finish the nichum, so that's when the Shiva is over. If, let's say, there's no minyan in the Shiva house, so only a woman is sitting Shiva, there is no minyan in the Shiva house for whatever reason, so then one should follow what the Ramah says, that after a certain amount of time, you make a cheshbon, how long minyan in town takes, then a few minutes after that, that's when the Shiva is over. And then it is not to end the availus the night before. That idea that, at least according to some Rishonim, the avails really ends the night before, Mitzvah Yom Kula flies the night before, this is the source for the machlekes that take place in a different type of avails. That's the avails of Sfira to Omer. We know that we have Ben Yimin Hagim of avails during Sfira, which have their roots, and already in the Gaonim have this practice. The Gemara in Yevam tells the story about the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, but the Gemara doesn't relate this to any practice of avails per se. The Gemara doesn't tell us what we're supposed to do about the fact that the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva died. So the Gaonim write that's because of this that the minhag developed, not to get married, that the haircuts are the minhagim of Sfira that we're familiar with. So the poskim have a whole discussion about when exactly the avails of Sfira end. So those who end the Sfira on Lag BaOmer, so at what point do we say that we say Miktas Yom Kukulo? So the Ramah writes that the minhag Ashkenazim is to permit all weddings and haircuts already on the 33rd day. You don't have to wait 33 full days. Miktas Yom Kukulo, so there was a further machlekes. Does that mean the night before? Does that mean even the morning of Lag BaOmer? So that's a shaila. There are different minhagim about that. So Ramah writes in the tshuva that I don't know whether the original tshuva was only written after the fast. He had already booked the place. Even lechavchil. I don't know the details of that particular case. But under certain circumstances, will be made because the sphere of sphere is only a minig anyway. It's not a real din. So maybe certain limited circumstances, we can rely on the mekilim even the night before. But in a normal protocol, there are more rights once you really wait to get a haircut until the day of Lag BaOmer. This year was a very tricky situation. Lag BaOmer was on a Friday. So basically, that was the end. You couldn't have weddings. No one's getting married on Friday. So there was a big push to have weddings on Thursday night. So they rely on that kula. So there was some relying on that kula of having weddings that night. So I guess the places weren't. Person is required to keep the halachas of shiva. What's the halacha the person doesn't? Person was didn't observe what they were supposed to do during shiva. So now they feel bad about it. So now they want to know: is there tashlumin for shiva? I didn't keep the veilus. He's supposed to keep it afterwards. So the rishonim quote the following compromise based on a raivid that it depends. But if the person mamash didn't keep any shiva at all, nothing. He didn't keep any of the isur of shiva. He didn't keep any of the days of shiva. Mamash was of the total free for all. So then, Tak he really is supposed to be mashed on afterwards. He should observe the shiva at a later point. Because through shloshim, he should take off 7 days and really observe shiva. So the person kept a quasi shiva. He kept a few days. He went to work a couple of days. He shouldn't have, or he didn't keep all the luck of the shiva. He kept a quasi, a little bit of shiva. As long as he did a chachah mitzvah and niyug of shiva, so then the luck is that he doesn't have to have any tashlum. But as long as there was some degree of shiva that was observed, it's okay. But if it was no shiva at all, neither in days nor in nihugim or nothing, so then the halacha is that a person would be required to be mashed in the shiva afterwards. Post can have a big machlokes. What if you have the following situation, that a person didn't observe shiva because they couldn't observe the shiva, not because they were amazed, not because they were careless, but they were sick, or they were in such a situation where it wasn't shech. They knew that their relative died, but they couldn't observe. They were in the hospital. They couldn't really observe shiva. So what's the halacha? Do they have to, when they get better, are they required to be mashed to make to observe the shiva later or not? So some poskim said yes. Some poskim said that if you didn't observe any shiva whatsoever, so you have to observe shiva at some point before shloshim is over. And other poskim make for a variety of reasons. Some poskim make one say that, well, a person who's sick, laying in the hospital, so they did observe technically some of the halachas of shiva. They weren't wearing shoes, they weren't washing themselves, they weren't doing work. So they, by default, they observed some of the halachas of shiva. And others say, that's not really observing the halachas of shiva. They didn't wear shoes because those wearing shoes, that's not really observing the shiva. But others give a different spur why. Others say, why is it that the Ravid says that if you missed shiva, you have to make it up? So the Ravid says, shelo yechete niskar. It's a clown in the halacha that if a person does an aveira, we don't want to reward you for doing something that's wrong. So the Ravid says, if a guy doesn't observe all of shiva, so we're going to say, yeah, no problem, so you don't have to observe shiva. Chayte niskar, so as a knas, as a penalty, if he wants to do tshuva, if he doesn't want to do tshuva, he's not going to lose knas, he'll lose knas, but if he wants to do tshuva, and he wants to observe shiva at a later point, so then we will tell him to observe shiva at a later point, as a knas, so to speak, as a penalty for what he did that was wrong. But let's say, Rahman was the last person, was stuck in the hospital, they couldn't observe shiva because they were not shaykh to observe shiva, it wasn't their fault, so then the whole chumra of the rabbi doesn't apply. So the shiva's over, it's over, finished. So this, unfortunately, sometimes these are very, very tragic shiles that have to sometimes be paskin. When you have, if you have like an accident or something, or where some of the members of the family are killed and others are not, but the others who survive also aren't in such good shape. So sometimes they're going to be in the hospital, they're going to be not shy to observe a proper shiva. So what's the halacha? I think that pashas is like these later posts will say that person wasn't at fault, obviously, for not keeping shiva. So whatever they do in the hospital, they do, and I guess they want to keep shiva, you have to put something else. But in terms of being required to observe a shiva, so a pashup shot is that they really wouldn't be required to. Okay, we'll take just a couple of minute break now, and hopefully, about 5 minutes, so we'll continue.
I'm saying, is this to say all these
halachas
are important? That's the impossible. Like,